Can you hear me? Yeah, it's working, right? Okay, good morning everybody. Welcome to Introduction to Cyber and Information Security Technology, IMT 4113. I hope you're all in the correct room there, because we just changed the room yesterday with IMT 4203, Critical Infrastructure Security, so might be a bit of a confusion there. Apologies for that, but that room was rather small that we got assigned first. My name is Patrick Boers, and I'm your teacher for this semester, but I will not do the teaching all by myself. I will have some guest lectures also. I will start today with a small introduction into this course, just some administrative things. Then after that, I'll say something about the course itself, give an introduction of what we are going to do, and then probably this afternoon we'll focus on MATLAB, as that is one of the programming languages that you will be going to use. I'll say a bit about that also. Let me see where we are. Does that work? No, that works there. There. Yeah, this is me. Patrick Boers, as I said on the first slide already. If you want to get in touch with me, you can do that in many different ways. Either you send me an email or you call my office phone number. But often I prefer that you physically visit me in my office, A115. I always like to see people when I talk to them. Or you add me to Skype, which is a very easy way of quickly answering questions. not very fond of sending back and forth many, many emails. It clogs up an email list, and yeah. I have two Skype addresses, patrick.boers.norge. That's the one where you can contact me for anything other than related to the actual, let's say, the content of this particular course, all the issues with this course. Anything related to this course, please use IMT4113 as Skype ID. I'm normally 24/7 on Skype, except, of course, when I'm sleeping or when I'm having other activities or when I'm teaching, although I'm on Skype now. Bit of background on me. I studied mathematics. I'm a mathematician. I did a master and a PhD in discrete mathematics, focusing on coding theory, which is slightly related to information security. After that, I worked for approximately 10 years at the Netherlands National Communication Security Area Agency, sorry, in the area of crypto, which is obviously related to information security. After that, that was 2005, I decided to come here. I moved to Norway then. In Norway, I first started as a postdoc in what was then called NISLAB for 3 years. And apparently I did something well because I got hired as an associate professor after that. And 4 years after becoming an associate professor, I qualified for a full professor position also. In between, I've had several roles. The two major ones was the head of NISLAB, Norwegian Information Security Laboratory, for 3 years. And I have been 2 years the study program responsible for the Master of Information Security. I'm actually one of the ones responsible for transforming it from the old program, which were had courses of 5 credits, to the current one where we have 7.5 credit courses. That role has been taken over by Eric. You have all seen him last week on Wednesday, I guess. I still have some kind of role in this study program. I'm the track champion, whatever that may be, for the technology track. There are 3 tracks. Come back to that in a minute also. Any questions related to the technology track or any organization around that, that's my responsibility. I'm not teaching alone. In class, there are nearly 40 people, but in the total course, there are apparently 80 students enrolled. So I can't do all of that myself. I will be responsible for the teachings that we have on Wednesday between 10 and 12 approximately. And then Jürgen and Emil will be my teaching assistants, and they will be responsible for, let's say, mainly the exercise sessions in the afternoon, although I will take the MATLAB in this afternoon. You can reach them by email. You can also reach them by the same Skype ID as the one that I'm also watching. So we're all watching that. Both of them started last year in the same program as you are in now. They did well, and they were awarded, in some sense, a teaching assistantship in this course. That could be you next year. That could be your picture next year, if you're interested, if you're doing well, of course. Jürgen and Emil have office hours. What is that? That means that they are available on those specific hours to answer questions via Skype. That may be not so relevant for you. You will see them, if everything goes well, in the exercise sessions on Wednesday afternoons. But there is a lot of externals, off-campus students, part-time or full-time, that are not available during these sessions. And then they have, specifically for the people that are working, they have a possibility to get in touch with somebody for asking questions in these periods. Yeah? Emil and Jürgen are here to help you. But please be kind to them. I need them the full semester, and don't stress them out too much. I'm not sure if you know PhD comics. Very interesting, very true. Many comics of these are very true. For example, deadlines. You will have some deadlines in this course. Don't wait until the last minute to go and ask them questions. A deadline is something very specific. A deadline is saying, okay, oh, you'll get some assignments in this course. I'll tell more about that later. The assignment, you will get it, and then 3 weeks later you have to deliver it. So the deadline is after 3 weeks. deadline doesn't mean that you have to wait until the last second to deliver. Please feel free to do the assignment right away and deliver right away. No need to wait very long. Yeah. So don't stress them. And then I have, let me see, I have to turn on the sound. I should have tested this. I have a small video, if I only had a mouse. There is the mouse. So small video of how teaching assistants are handled. This is also from PhD Comics. But look at it. There are so many truths in this. Let's hope the sound works. No, that was the wrong button. So the TA is not there to answer your question. You have to come up with an answer yourself. The TA is there to guide you, of course. They will be there to help you. They will be there to give you hints, to point you to in the direction, but you have to do the major bulk of the work, obviously. Before we get to the real course, I want to say something about the Master of Information Security program that you're in, or the part-time program. There are three tracks. Eric mentioned that also before, last week. There is the Cyber and Information Security Technology track, or simply Technology. There is Information Security Management, and there is Digital Forensics track. Actually, the reason why I have it in this order is that 2005, when I came, there was no tracks. There was just Master of Information Security. But at some point, not long after that, students were asking, hey, we are more interested in management. Can we have a dedicated track for that? And so that's why when we created the Information Security Management track, leaving the rest as the technology track. Yeah, so there was a direction which was technology-oriented, and there was a direction which was management, more information security management-oriented. And then, I forgot the year, say 2011 or something. Around that year, there was the digital forensics track, because we noticed from industry, from our customers, that there was a large interest in having more experts in digital forensics. And so a new course, a technical track was again established, which focused more on digital forensics. So management is more management-like. The technology and the digital forensics track are more technology-oriented, both of them. In your studies, you will have four semesters. It's a two-year study. First semester is common for all students. You don't have to worry about track in the first semester. Everybody will have the same courses. There will be, and I'll tell that in a second. The second and the third semester are track specific. So depending on what track you select, you'll get a set of courses. The fourth semester is then your master thesis. I still have here related to your track. Apparently that's no longer true. Before there was a requirement that if you're on the management track, you have a topic for your master thesis that is management related, information security management related. If you're in the technology track, you have something related to information security technology. Apparently that requirement has lifted. So, but anyway, it seems more logical that if you're on the management track, that you don't select a hardcore crypto topic for your master thesis. So it's not required, but it is logical, I would say. Then, more in detail, in the first semester, you will have four courses in total. One is the methodology course, which is common for all master students, so not just information security. But all the information security students will have three introductory courses. Introduction to information security management, introduction to digital forensics, introduction to cyber and information security technology. So we are introducing all three tracks to you. Why do we do that? Because most of you probably are not really clear yet on which track to select. So we are giving you some hints on, okay, within this track, you can expect these kinds of topics. On the other hand, we want all students to have the same basis of knowledge. You can't be in information security management without knowing anything about crypto. You need a basis of crypto also. You need to know something about network security also, or system security. You need to know a bit about digital forensics too. So you need to have some common knowledge. You can't be a information security technology person if you don't know anything about the management around it, about the human aspects and the risk analysis and stuff like that. So you need some basis anyway. All students need a basis here. And once you finish your studies here, at least we want that basic set of knowledge for everybody. So that's in the first semester. In the second semester, for the technology track then only, you will have a number of courses. In alphabetical order, not because my name is mentioned with the first one, one course in the second semester is biometrics. So related to authentication, but we'll specifically focus on behavioral and biological biometrics. I'll explain in a couple of weeks what that exactly means. I'm the course responsible for that, but I'm not doing the teaching myself. I'm doing part of the teaching, but most of the teaching is actually done by Professor Christoph Busch, but he has a part-time position here. He's mostly in Germany, so he will not be the course responsible. I'm responsible for all the administrative stuff around it. Second semester course. Then there is critical infrastructure security, which is given by Sokratis Katsikas. He's actually teaching at the very moment in room A153. That will be a third semester course, and Sokratis will actually introduce this topic to you also later on. Cryptology, very important in information security, will be given by Slobodan Petrovic. And that is, again, a second semester course. And in the third semester, you will see Slobodan again with intrusion detection in physical and virtual networks, or simply intrusion detection, if for short. Yeah, so Slobodan is teaching these two courses. Network security, that will be Steven Wolthuizen. You saw him last Wednesday on Skype. That's Steven. Again, also Steven will come and introduce his course. And then finally, system security. These are the courses that you will have in the technology track. So these two are in the third semester, and the other four are in the second semester. The last three are actually in common with the digital forensics track. Yeah, they also have network security, system security, and intrusion detection. While they further on will focus more on digital forensic basics, and the mathematics and stuff and the technology behind it, while we have these courses in the technology track. In this course, I will go over these topics also. So there will be four themes: crypto, cryptology, and then authentication, identification, which include biometrics, network security, and system security. Beside that, There will also be 1 week where Slobodan will introduce intrusion detection, and there will be 1 week where Socrates will come and introduce critical infrastructure security. We'll spend 3 weeks on crypto, 3 weeks on system security, and the other two themes we'll spend 2 weeks on. That's then 10 weeks plus the 2 weeks from Slobodan and Socrates plus this week, and then we are up to 13 weeks. Oh, there was more on that slide, I believe. Yeah. This is a technology-related track. So that means I do expect that you know something about programming and something about mathematics. Not deep mathematics, not programming large programs and great graphical user interfaces. The basics only. You need that for your assignments. So in my assignments, I require you to do some programming, and some mathematics is required. For example, in crypto, you will see that in a couple of weeks also. Don't worry if you think that mathematics is difficult. Many people think that mathematics is difficult, but we'll keep it to the basics and we'll try to explain as much as possible. And there where we fail to explain it to you correctly, please ask us. This is the course setup. We'll have 5 hours in total, 2 to 3 hours of lectures per week, plus 2 hours of exercises. And then in the beginning, the first couple of weeks, it will be planned between 10 and 3. So that means that we would not have a break. Obviously, we will have a break, but I might expand my 2 hours of lectures a bit into that break, between 12 and 1, to be able to finish the lecture that I prepared for that week. Yeah, it's better to just use some more time than to hurry and lose a couple of students along the way. The last couple of weeks, it will be a bit more spread out, and there will be a real one-hour break in between. Check the time plan for the actual schedule. I think as it looks now, let's see if I can show that. So apparently this is the new schedule. It seems that we are all in with the classes, my teaching in this room, except towards the end. Then we are all over the place again. And the exercise sessions is just planned for the first 2 weeks, and I got news that the rest of the schedule will be adjusted too. Yeah. So somewhere between 12 and 1 today, we have to shift from this room to room E. 211. Yeah, but check the time schedule. If there are last minute changes, obviously I will use Blackboard to announce it as I did yesterday also. Yep. This lecture is recorded, so that's why I'm using the microphone. I'm generally can shout hard enough so that you can hear me at the end of the hallway too. It is recorded for the off-campus students. It's actually streamed, so people might be watching at this very moment also. Yeah, it's a stream only. Unfortunately, it's not a two-way channel. Yeah, that's again why I'm using Skype. So if you have questions, then Skype is the way back. And I see that I actually have a message, and I must say I ignored it for now. For the exercise session, I cannot guarantee that there is recording. I'll try to have it, but I cannot guarantee it. If you want to see the presentation or see the streaming, then you have to go here. This is actually me at the moment with a bit of delay. This is the link that I just provided for lesing.hig.no. And there you can either go to Publicierte Optak, where you can look at what was recorded before, or you can go to Strömming, and there you can see things live. Oh, that's a bit too far. Um, The fact that I record and stream, it's very convenient. It's very convenient for the off-campus students. Yeah, they're part-time students that are working hard now, and they will come home tonight and they will watch what we have been discussing. That's great, because otherwise they would just have a set of slides which obviously contains less information than this full hour. There are a number of full-time students that are actually not present in Jövik. They live in Oslo, they live in Bergen, they live in even in Zurich, I believe. Yeah. So for them, they might actually be sitting and looking at this stream right now. For you, it will be convenient also. Because tonight you come home and you said, okay, he was talking about this and this. Yeah, let me go back and review what he said. Please don't use this streaming and recording as a great way to sleep late. Yeah, we start at 10 o'clock. Everybody should be up by then, right? Being present during the lectures has major advantages. Yeah, you get to see your classmates. You get to get a group feeling. You can ask questions more directly. You get direct feedback on your questions, everything. And specifically the exercise sessions. If there's no recording of an exercise session, yeah, then being on campus, being in class, obviously has a huge advantage over sitting at home, staying in bed. Then we're sitting here obviously to learn something, but we want to qualify that at some point in time in a grade. And the grade for this course is based on two parts. There will be an exam, 3-hour exam, I believe on the 12th of December, if I remember correctly, long time from now. That will count for 60% of your final grade. And then there will be 4 mandatory assignments, and each of them will count for 10%. All of these parts, I don't like giving you an A for an assignment and then the next time giving you a B for an assignment. I don't know what the average between A and B is. I can't calculate in letters. So what I'll do is I'll give you 8 points out of 10 for the assignment, or 9 points, or 7 points, or whatever. Yeah, and I'll give you on the exam, I'll give you out of the 60 points, I'll give you 50 or 40 or 20 if you're doing bad. Then I'll just use all these numerical values to calculate a weighted average, so a value between 0 and 100, and only then I will convert it to an A to F scale. Yeah, so you'll get numerical grades all through the semester, and then finally in StudentWeb you'll find some letter on the A to F scale. People are often disappointed if they get a C. A C is not a bad grade. A C is an average grade. If you look at the grading scales, you will see that there are a lot of people with a C grade, and then some less with a B grade, and few with an A grade. And on the other side, some with a D grade, and hopefully nobody with an E and an F grade. There will be people with an F grade, I can tell you beforehand. That's not rocket science. Yeah, so please don't be disappointed if you get a C grade. C represents... The grade in some way represents also your effort in this course. There's also the affinity with this topic, of course. I believe that. But if you put in more effort than average, you'll get more than an average grade. Normally. Yeah? So the more effort you put in it, most likely that will mean that your grade will be influenced to the good side of the scale. All of this material can be found in Blackboard. I had Blackboard also open. There's Blackboard. Your view on Blackboard and my view on Blackboard is slightly different, but anyway. Where's my mouse? Somewhere, there's my mouse. This is this year's course. Let me show what it looks for you. There it is. So this is what you see. So these are the messages that I sent before. You'll see something about the course information. You see information about the assignments, for example, there. Assignments, you don't see anything yet. The assignments are there already, but I've hidden them for you. Your first assignment will be here available like magic on at the end of the class next week. And here is, well, from the moment, part of the lecture material. Here nothing is hidden, I just didn't put the rest in yet. Yeah. So there is something about the introduction already and something about the cluster of 3 weeks teaching about crypto. So that's Blackboard. All the information, in principle, or let's say most of the information, can be found in Blackboard. If I want to contact you, I can do that by making these announcements on Blackboard and sending it to you directly. Sometimes I just make an announcement and I don't send it directly because it's just for your information, but sometimes I need you to know this information right away, like the change of room, for example, and then I will send it also directly. Or what I can also do is use email to send information to you. Then I will use, if I start sending, I will use the NTNU email. Yeah. If you send me something from your own email address, that's okay. I will reply to that. It's not like I'm saying, oh, this is not NTNU. I'll ignore that. This is the book we're using. Computer Security from Stallings. Principles and Practice. Who has the book already? Some. Last year, we had some trouble with the bookshop, Muse Book. No, it's called different nowadays. Because I just ordered too few. So so be as quick as possible to get a copy. If they are running out of copies, if you get there and they say we're out, just let me know. Yeah, so I can push them to buy more. Make sure that if you buy it online, that you buy this book. This is the global edition, which is slightly different from the, let's say, the regular edition. Yeah? I've copied chapter 1 of this book, and I put that in the Blackboard. That was chapter 1 of the international, the regular edition. Yeah? I checked, content is the same, the exercises at the end, those are slightly different. But don't worry about that. Yeah, once you have the book, you have everything as it should be. I will not do that for other... Oh, my coffee. I will not do that for other chapters. Now it's up to you to buy the book. Just, again, as a service to you to have some information before actually the course started, I did that. ISBN numbers are here. Or you can go to Pearson's International and then find it there. If you're contacting me, if you're adding me to Skype, and your Skype ID is Hufflepuff. I don't know that. I don't know you, right? Please introduce yourself. Say, hey, I am this and this person. I am in your course. Please add me to Skype. If you're sending me an email, and your email address is unicorn101@gmail.com, that doesn't relate to any face or any name that I can see here or can read in a list. Please introduce yourself. Write, be polite. You're 20 years old. You don't, or 20 plus. You probably have learned to do this in a correct way. Spelling is important. Spelling is important. It's not important. Obviously, very typical. There are problems with spelling errors like your. Okay, that's a difficult one. I know that. So if you make spelling errors like that, that's okay. But if you write an email with hours with the U and the O turnaround, yeah, that's getting a bit annoying. For the email, we can read over it, and for Skype, we can read over that. For your assignments, please use spell check. Takes you 5 minutes, saves me a lot of annoyance. Yeah? Just try to be polite in the interaction. Then we'll try to do the same, of course. This is the teaching schedule in more detail. Week 34 today, so the introduction, chapter 1, you hopefully read that all, I'll go into that in a bit later, and then we'll do the MATLAB introduction. Then the next 3 weeks, 35 to 37, we'll go over crypto, and then from the book by Stallings, that means chapters 2, 20, and 21 that you have to read. Yeah, please, before you come to class, read the relevant material. You don't need to read all of those three chapters before next week. No, there is in Blackboard, I will announce what you have to read before the next week. 2 weeks with authentication and identification, where we'll cover chapter 3, but I'll also add additional material on password security, which is partially covered here also, and I will do biometrics. The part on biometrics in Stalling's book is very, very little. Then we have a break. Week 40 and week 9 are always school holidays here in Uppland, and I'll try to stick to that. So there will be no classes unless something specific happens, and then maybe I'm sick 1 week and we have to use that as a spillover week. Then actually week 41 and 43 will cover network security, and weeks 42, 44, and 45 will cover system security, and again with the appropriate chapters mentioned. Then I'll start in the second half of the semester, I'll start using guest lecturers. I'll use Stephen Walthusen in week 43 to say something about, I think he wants to cover denial of service attacks, which is chapter 7. Yeah, he will cover that, and he will probably some more, and he will introduce the network security course also to you. Same with Basil Kott. In week 45, he will cover parts of the system security course, and then weeks 46 and 47, it's Slobodan and Socrates who come here for a guest lecture. Slobodan will cover chapters 8 and 9 of Stalling's book. Critical infrastructure security is actually not covered in this book. You see that a number of chapters are missing. I see chapter 1, 2, 3, 4 to 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 to 13. And then there is a gap until chapter 20. So chapters 14 till 19 are not covered in this course. If you go into the book, into the content section, and then you see that actually covers part 3 of this book, which says management issues. And management issues are not covered here. This is a technology course. Management issues are covered in the information security management course. But I'm not sure. I don't think they use this book. So this is in more detail the setup. And then I could have added here, I don't know what week it is, but the exam is on the, as far as I know, the 12th of December. Something about my favorite question. What do you think my favorite question is? It's in quotes, so it's not really a favorite. Oh, yeah, that's a nice one, too. No. That could have been. Now, if you ask questions about last week or something, that's okay, sure. I assume that everybody will, before they come to class, prepare themselves. So read out of the book. Then you get some information from me and from the TAs in the exercise session, and then you go home, and it's not like you drop everything until the next week. No, you review what you have done. More or less, there are 5 hours here in class, spent 5 hours also on preparations and reviewing. Yeah, if you do that on a weekly basis, you will see that passing this course with a good grade will not be that hard. And you don't push out all the work until the end of the semester. So if you have questions based on that review of the class, just ask. Or ask using Skype in between, either for the teaching hours or send it to me. Now my favorite question is, will this be on the test? You saw it in the video also. In principle, I wouldn't be standing here telling you this if it wouldn't be on the test, or if it wouldn't have a possibility to be on the test. But having said that, I'll show that one also. Having said that, obviously, I will give pointers to where more deep knowledge of a particular subject can be found. But I will make known to you that in some parts I instead of having black text, I use gray text. So indicating that this is more background knowledge. For example, next week or the week after, I guess, I will tell you something about linear feedback shift registers. Nobody? Okay. And a way to break them. which is called the Burlak and Massey algorithm. That part, the linear feedback shift registers, I will teach you. But the Burlak and Massey algorithm, I'll put in gray in the slides, because that is background knowledge. If you're interested in that, just go deeper. But I will mention just very briefly. Yeah. But please ask this question anyway. It will give me a good hint of what you like on the test, or not like. Yeah. So it can be on the test always. Assignments. 4 assignments. And you will get an assignment on each of the 4 main topics: crypto, authentication, network security, system security. Each of them will count for 10%. So 40% in total. 10% is not a lot. So I'm not requiring you to write complete novels. Does anybody know George Martin? A few. I guess if I ask if anybody knows Game of Thrones, then I would have more, but I guess watching the series is easier than reading the book. George Martin wrote books. He wrote the Game of Thrones series. I think I read all the books. He didn't finish it yet, the series. It starts with a thick book, and it ends with a huge book. Yeah, he writes a lot. I don't want to grade a lot. I have to grade a lot anyway, because there are 80 students in this class. So it's a lot of work anyway. So, and it's not a lot of each assignment. It's just small for each of you. So don't write complete novels. First assignment, it's a programming assignment, and you have to deliver a program. Beside that, I'm asking for a 1-page reflection. So nothing deep, nothing extensive, just a 1-page reflection that will, more or less for my good being, is learning me something about how you feel about this particular assignment. I'm not gonna subtract points if you write 1.5 pages, of course. But once you start reading 5 or 10 pages, I might not read that in all that detail. Only 10%. So I say it's little. On the other hand, it's big. Suppose that you decide, oh, this assignment I don't like, I don't deliver that. You're losing 10 out of 100 points. At the end of the course, you will have a maximum of 90 out of 100 points then. If we assume that everything else goes perfect. 90 out of 100 points is at the border of an A grade. So dropping one assignment means already more or less dropping your A grade. You drop this assignment because you don't like it, probably you're not doing perfect in all the other parts. Yeah, so even if something is hard, please deliver these assignments. Mandatory here, did I write mandatory? I wrote mandatory somewhere else. Mandatory doesn't mean that if you don't deliver it, you fail the course. So that might be a wrong use of the word mandatory, but please deliver that. There, it is 10 points. It's a lot. 4 times, it's 40 points. It's half of your grade almost. And they are not that hard. Oh, one more thing there. The course is 7.5 credits. We count approximately 30 hours of work per credit point. Quick mathematics, 7.5 credits, 225 hours of work. For me, for my course. Yeah, I don't talk about Stuart and Carl about their course, or Frode about his course. 225 hours that I want your attention. So 10% of the grade, approximately 10% of the workload. 22 and a half hours. You will notice that the assignments are not that big. You will not be spending. Actually, the first assignment last year was on crypto, and they got the students got an encrypted text, and they had to decrypt it. The first student was ready in the exercise session after the class. So 2 hours. Yeah, he had to write a report, so might have been 3 hours in total. That's an exception, obviously. Yeah, he got an A at the final grade also, but even if you're not a big programmer, even if you think crypto is hard, 5, 6, 10 hours would have been enough. Yeah, so these are simple ways to get a good grade. Programming is needed. I said that. So the first assignment is already programming. The first assignment is deliver me a program that on this given input gives me output based on this description. And we're using MATLAB. Who has used MATLAB before? Oh, that's good. Not Alipara. All the others. Okay, now let's turn it around. Who has no programming experience? Okay, so you all have programming experience. Who is not capable of logical thinking? Few. Nice try, I'll just remember the faces. If you can do logical thinking, if you know any programming language, you will see that you know MATLAB. MATLAB can do specific calculations in a much, much, much more efficient way. But you can program also, let's say, in the normal Java, C sharp way. Yeah, I'm not grading your assignment based on the efficiency of your solution. I'm basing it on the correctness of your solution. But because not everybody knows MATLAB in that many details, I will go over this afternoon, and I'll have two pointers also for where you can find more information. Assignments are individual, but you are allowed to ask me questions. You are allowed to ask the teaching assistants questions. You're also allowed to talk amongst yourself. Yeah, if there is a group working on this assignment together, yeah, it's not like you have to just shield your work and not talk to it. You are allowed to talk together. Hey, how did you do this solution? I'm having this problem. How did you solve it? Plagiarism is not allowed. That's not a big surprise. But maybe it will be a surprise that we can detect it. And I'm not going over each and every line of code or each of every line that you wrote in a report. We have automatic tools for that. So we can detect plagiarisms. And unfortunately for you, plagiarism has severe consequences. Yeah, that can, depending on the scale, that can go from expelling you from this course. Let's say that can go from a slap on the fingers and maybe a reduction of points for an assignment or whatever, until expelling you from the course, until expelling you from the program. So please, please, please don't do it. In case of doubt, ask. Assignments will be given every third week. Crypto assignment you will get in week 35, next week. And here it says generally 2 or 3 weeks deadline. I've set everything to a 3 weeks deadline. So you deliver that in week 38 on Tuesday. So you'll get it on Wednesday. You deliver it on Tuesday before midnight. Then on the Wednesday after that, week 38, you'll get your second assignment. That will be on authentication identification when we start that topic. 3 weeks deadline, etc. And then we roll over. So every time after 3 weeks you deliver on a Tuesday, or before the Wednesday at least, and then you get the new assignment the next day. That's the deadline for delivering. Yeah, obviously, if you're finished, deliver it, forget about it. Don't save up the work. These assignments, as said, are relatively small. Do the work, get it over, get it out of your way. Spend time on either other courses or on fun things. There's very, very little room for deadline extensions. The assignments are not that big. And unless there is a very urgent reason, you can get no extension. A bad reason is, well, the 3 weeks are up tomorrow. I haven't done anything yet, but I have also a deadline for this and this course. That's not my problem. You plan your own time. You have 3 weeks for this. Let's say at most 22 and a half hours of work. You can plan that within these 3 weeks. 3 weeks, 21 days, it's an hour per day. Extensions have been given in the past. Last year there was a part-time student who was working in the military. He was sent abroad for a couple of months. Obviously, that's a good reason for an extension. And then, based on my communication with that particular student, we decided on, okay, then you deliver on this. And that will be an extension that will be fair to that student and also fair to the other group. It's not like, okay, yeah, just deliver it whenever you want. Yeah, when giving extensions, it needs to be in some kind of fair way. Getting sick at the end. Yeah, I have to deliver tonight, but stomach problems. Yeah, sure. You could have started 3 weeks ago. Yeah? So be careful. Extensions are not given that easily. In case of questions, ask immediately. Now we're talking about assignments. Actually, I could have said that at every slide. Whenever you have questions, do not hesitate to ask. You're in class. Did anybody have a question already? Did I go too fast on some of the topics? Everything still okay? Yeah. In class, if you have a question, if I don't see you raise your hand, just shout at some point in time. Ask immediately. If you're sitting at home studying and you're doing whatever, crypto, and saying, oh yeah, he said that in class this afternoon and I don't get the concept. Send me an email. Send me a Skype message, whatever. Yeah, ask me immediately. Ask the TAs if there's teaching office hours they have. Okay, I know you're not, or most of you are not experts in MATLAB, so there are two links. One from MATLAB itself, from MathWorks itself, where you can get a basic introduction into the topic. One from Coursera, which has a good course on MATLAB. If you're good in programming, you can skip a lot. Or you can go very fast through these courses. MATLAB specific issues come in this Coursera course only towards the end. MATLAB has the same things as Java, C#, whatever, Python. It has if statements, it has loops, it has while statements, it has assignments, it has strings, it has numbers, it whatever. Yeah? First session this afternoon is for MATLAB. And this is a relatively new course for me. I had to adjust this slide because last year it was really the first time that I did it. I improved the course. That's good for you already. But still, this is not a perfect course. It will never be a perfect course. So any time that you see something that there is errors in the slides or in the material, whatever, if you have questions, if I'm not focusing enough on a particular topic or focusing too much on a particular topic, just tell me, and then I can improve the course. Please be in class on time. I saw some people coming in late. We'll just pretend that that had to do with the fact that you were standing at the other room. But yeah, it is a disturbance. I try to ignore it as much as possible, but it is a disturbance. And so, yeah, just be here on time, please. Interrupt me at any time, I said. Yeah, not right away shouting. Not all shouting together, but please raise your hand. If I don't see you, then you can always shout. Contact details, once again. Ask questions in class. Oh, that's also a very good one. You have a question. Yeah? That question and the answer to that might not be just interesting for you. It can be interesting for everybody. Yeah? There are no stupid questions. All questions are, oh, good, yeah. Why are we using MATLAB? Because two reasons. I speak MATLAB. That's a bad reason. The other reason, and more relevant, is that in the remainder of the courses, you will be using MATLAB too. Yeah. Yeah. So, good question. Relevant for the other ones. Everyone was pondering also. Yeah, I know MATLAB, but why do we use or don't know MATLAB yet? So, why do I have to learn this? But now everybody knows. You could have come to me in the break and said, hey, why do we use MATLAB? And then you would have known, but the rest wouldn't. Yeah? So good to ask questions. I try to stick to 45 minutes of lectures, maybe a bit more. Now it's about 50 minutes, so that's not too bad. But sometimes I carry on. I'm into a topic and I'm just talking and talking and talking. If I'm going way past this 45 minutes, then just say, time for a break. Right? Let me know if I forget, please. Any other questions? This is time for questions. Any other questions? This was more or less this first part. After the break, I will go into the let's say chapter one, and then in the afternoon into MATLAB. Yes, you had a question. What are basic mathematics? I repeat it for the people online. I should have thought about the other question also. What are the basics for? What are basic mathematics? Basic informatics. Do you know how to multiply? Do you know what a finite field is? Ah, that might be a bit more difficult, right? Finite fields, we'll use them. I'll explain them when we get to that. But at least you have, once I start explaining that, you have to have enough mathematical background. Let's take another example. Modular calculation. Do you know what modulus is? Yeah, if I take a number and I take it modulo another number. We'll use it in the exercise session also this afternoon. These kinds of things. Nothing very difficult. Once I cannot expect you to know it already from your high school, then I will start explaining it. You have to know I'm not trying to go over in my head where we use mathematics and computers and programming. I think the crypto is most mathematical mathematically heavy. Do you know Euclid's algorithm? Who does not know Euclid's algorithm? Okay, one, not two. That's okay. We'll go into that in detail. Euclid's algorithm is there to calculate the greatest common divisor between two numbers, right? Who doesn't know the extended Euclidean algorithm? Okay, then more. Okay, we'll go into that. Yeah. So don't worry. If at some point the mathematics is going too fast, then please tell me. Say, okay, this is way out of my league. Explain. Yeah. In terms of programming, for your first assignment, you have to create a program related to crypto that does some kind of encryption. I can't give the details of it yet, but you will hear that next week. You have to do some programming where I tell you what the function looks like that you need to program. This and this and this is the input, and this should be the output. The output should look like this. If you're capable of logical thinking, if you're capable of any programming language that has a for statement and a while loop and an if statement and maybe some more things, then you should be able to do all these assignments. Yeah? That should not be a problem. The difficulty about MATLAB, going back to your question also, is not so much that there is a lot of new stuff in MATLAB, but it's a different dialect, right? In one language you have an if statement with brackets, and in MATLAB you don't have brackets or whatever. Yeah, there are these local differences. But thinking of what you have to program and making a logical structure of what you want, that should be doable. Yeah, and then putting it into MATLAB, yeah, that might be uncommon for some of you, but you will learn very, very quickly. Any other questions? Last year I had two programming assignments, a theoretical one, and then the fourth one was where people could choose. This year it might be a mixture of it too, but I only decided on the first assignment, which is programming. Most likely the second assignment will be programming too, but I haven't thought much further than that. But I prefer something where you really have to use technical knowledge over, yeah, here is a bunch of paper, read it and write a report about it. Yes?
If I'm doing the course part-time on campus,
yeah.
Is there any specific lectures that would be wise to be in?
You saw the schedule? Yeah, all of them. No. As a part-time student, first of all, thanks for joining on the first lecture. I think that is very important because of this information. There is, in principle, you can follow everything online and use the office hours very wisely. If you have a possibility to be here on some of the lectures, I would personally say do it for the crypto lectures. In your background, how much do you know about network security and stuff like that?
Yeah, a bit.
How much do you know about crypto?
Actually, it's
From Sobodan, you mean?
No, from
Nils, actually. Oh, many years ago. Yeah. That's 2004 or something like that. Yeah. Many years ago. I think the course has changed, but the week 37 is asymmetric crypto, which is, let's say, mathematically the most challenging. That could be, if you have to pick one, I would pick that one. Yeah? But you'll get information on what we'll do anyway, so you can, yeah, depends on how you can arrange it with your job, but if you, at any point you can decide, okay, I want to go, if you know beforehand what the topic is, you can use that. More questions? Okay, if not, then we'll have a 15-minute break. It's now 11:12 on my watch. Let's start here again at 11:30. Yeah? Is that okay? Okay, thanks. Okay. Let's then continue with the next presentation, introduction to the topic, which is based on chapter 1. I uploaded chapter 1, or a copy of that, to Blackboard. Did everybody find it? Did everybody read it? I hear some yeses. That's good. As I said earlier, this is the normal edition. I visually checked if at least the structure and the lines ended at the same point as it did in the global edition, and that was the case. So most likely all the content is the same, except for at the end the questions. Those are different. That should not be the biggest problem. So if you go to that particular... If you go to that particular chapter, you see a number of sections in there, six different sections, apart from recommended reading and key terms and everything. That are those. So I'll just try to follow briefly. I'll follow that structure and I'll briefly go over this this chapter, so you have an idea of what you can expect in information security. Not all that technical. Personally, not the most exciting to teach. Yeah, the most exciting, or the more exciting stuff comes from next week when we do crypto. And the other stuff, of course. So first, some concepts. So here is a definition. Computer security deals with assets that are subject to a variety of threats for which appropriate measures must be taken to protect those assets. So we're talking about assets, things that we value. There are pictures in my computer, personal pictures, are valued though. Those are assets. And there might be a threat that I lose them, that somebody else sees them. Right? I don't want you to go into my computer and watch my personal photographs. Yeah, so I have to protect it. I have to make sure that you don't get access to that information. That's one threat, that somebody can see those. Another threat could be that I lose them. This computer could crash. So I have to take appropriate measures to counter these kinds of threats. Appropriate measures. If I don't want anybody to get access to these pictures, I could take a big crate and I put my computer in there and I put concrete on top of that. Right? Nobody will have access to this. Or I smash my hard disk or whatever. Nobody would have access to my photographs. That's clearly not an appropriate measure. Yeah, because it brings other problems with it. Yeah, so we have to see what an appropriate measure is. If I want to drive to Oslo, I don't need to buy a Porsche or a Tesla. I can use a small Volkswagen or whatever. Right? Appropriate. So we have to look at what do we want to have. The three things that we have to consider then. What are the assets exactly that we're trying to protect? So my personal photos in this, but for example, I have MATLAB installed. That is not a real asset to me. I don't value that installation of MATLAB. If that gets lost, if that gets corrupted, if you see that I have it, not a big deal. If it gets corrupted, I'll install it again. So I wouldn't consider that an asset. How are the assets threatened? Yeah, is a threat that I want to keep it to myself? Is a threat that I might lose it? And then, obviously, how can we counter those threats? Once I know what the threat is against my asset, I have to find the appropriate measure to counter it. When we talk about information security, we talk about CIA. Right? And I'm not this CIA. They are involved in information or in security anyway, but not the ones that we are interested in. So when we talk about CIA, we actually talk about three terms: confidentiality, integrity, and availability. That's CIA in information security. And we talk about confidentiality, that relates to data confidentiality and privacy. I have a particular file and I want to keep it confidential from you. You can't see the content. Or I want to preserve privacy. That's also part of confidentiality. Integrity that relates to data integrity and system integrity. If I put something on Blackboard, you want to be sure that that is correct information, that there's no change in this information. That's data integrity. System integrity relates to that machine is functioning, that system is running. Does it run in the way that I think it's running, that it should be running? We often see a picture like this, data in center and then confidentiality, integrity, and availability around it. There we have it again. Protection against unauthorized disclosure of information. That's a more formal definition of confidentiality. Yeah, unauthorized disclosure. I want to send a message to somebody. That person is authorized to see that information. But all the others might not be. Yeah, so unauthorized. Only those that are authorized are allowed to see information. Others are not. Integrity avoid intentional or unintentional modification of information. Somebody can get in and delete my pictures. Oh, that's availability, by the way. Or change my pictures. Or change a message that I put on Blackboard. That's intentional. On the other hand, I could make a typo. That's unintentional. Yeah, I have a message that I wanted to tell you, and I'm typing it in as an announcement in Blackboard. Make a typo. That's an unintentional. And then availability is ensured timely and reliable access to information. If the information is located on a remote server, then availability means that when I want to get access to that information, I should be able to set up a connection and to retrieve that information. Yeah, threat could be a denial of service attack that overflows the server and I don't get to that information. These are the most used concepts, confidentiality, integrity, and availability, but you will notice that there are other concepts too that people have introduced, but it didn't pick up that well. Authenticity, meaning genuineness of the data or a user. I'm communicating, we'll talk about that in crypto also. I'm communicating with you, and I want to make sure that the person on the other side is in fact the person I think I'm communicating with, not somebody pretending to be that person. So how can we assure that? Same for data. Accountability is when I have a trace of actions that took place, I want to be able to say this person did this action, this person. I want to be able to prove that. It's accountability. Then we never have absolute security, obviously. So there is a possibility that there is a security breach at some point in time. Yeah, just read technical journals where you hear about passwords being stolen, WannaCry, these kinds of things. So security breaches happen. Then we can quantify three levels of impact. Very simple: low, medium, and high. Low, meaning that there is a limited effect. There was a breach, limited effect on the organization or on the individuals. Yeah, for example, sure, there was some money stolen. Not a big deal, company can still run. Some money was stolen or some money had to be invested to secure a particular leak or whatever. Yeah, there is a loss of money, minor for the company. Moderate, it's called not medium, moderate. Then the effects become a bit more serious. Yeah. Significant degradation in mission capability. Okay, there is a DDoS attack for, let's say, an hour, and for an hour this company is not able to deliver services to its genuine customers. And then we have high, where the effects are very severe. Catastrophic, it's a nice term. Loss of life, that's rather catastrophic. If it would be me, I wouldn't be happy. Serious life-threatening injuries, major amounts of money lost by a company up to a point where they go bankrupt, maybe. Maybe their best assets, the company secrets are stolen. Another company, maybe in China, sets up a starting to make fake products based on your company secrets. Yeah, so different levels of impact of a breach. We are teaching you a lot about information security. But you will notice that when you look at information security, there are many challenges. Seems simple, right? Okay, I want to send you a message, but I don't want the others to know it. Okay, we'll use crypto. That's easy, right? But the whole process around it is very complicated. You can read all of them yourself. Let's see a nice one. Attackers need to find a single weakness. Developers need to find all weaknesses. So I have a system, and I want to protect it, and you're all attacking me. And you're thinking in a completely different way from you and from you and from you. But I have to think in all these ways, because the attack that you can come up with, I have to protect against, but also all the other ones. So as a developer, I have an enormous task. I have to be able to think in many different ways, what many different attackers could come up with. Yeah? And if I come up with many different ways of protecting my system, but you're thinking slightly out of the box, you could still break my system, because that's something that I didn't consider. Here, all of these concepts come together. So we have the assets. In the definition in the beginning, assets had a central role. Assets are there to be protected. So as an owner, I have some value in this asset. But a threat agent, so somebody attacking me, say an attacker for short, he wants to get access to my asset. He wants to get to know the content of my file. He wants to destroy it. He wants to change it, whatever. And so a threat agents come up with a threat and a threat to my asset. So as an owner, I want to know what the risk is that my asset is attacked. So I want to minimize that risk, and in order to do so, I have to impose countermeasures to reduce that risk. Yeah? While on the other hand, so the countermeasures reduce the risk, while on the other hand, the threats increase that risk. So all of these concepts come together. Yeah? I'll just do that for you to follow where I approximately am. If we look at threats and attacks, we see that there are four kinds of threat consequences. There is a threat to confidentiality, so unauthorized disclosure. Again, the word unauthorized. The message that I sent to somebody and I want them to read it, that's disclosure also, but that's not unauthorized. That's not a threat to confidentiality. But if somebody else gets access to that particular message, that's a threat to confidentiality. Deception is a term that is used for a threat to system or data integrity. Again, data integrity, making sure that my data is correct, that there are no intentional or unintentional changes to that. System integrity means, is this system performing task in the way that it should be doing it? Disruption, threat to availability of the system, like DOS attack, denial of service, or distributed denial of service attack. And then, again, usurpation, a bit less clear, but that's, again, a threat to the system integrity. As an attacker, I can work in two different ways. I can be passive, and I can be active. So what's the difference? Well, a passive attacker is, as it says, it's passive in the sense that he doesn't interfere with the system. He's just listening. He's just observing the system. So he learns information from a system, but doesn't interfere. So in fact, as the owner of that system, I actually couldn't see that a passive attacker was there. So he's eavesdropping, monitoring, taking copy of all the communications or whatever. And there are two types of attacks that he could do. He could just monitor the communication and trying to extract the context from that, the message content from that. Yeah, for example, if it's encrypted messages, he could try to decrypt them. He doesn't interfere with the system. He doesn't go looking for keys or whatever. Yeah, he just sees the message stream. He sees the encrypted text of the encrypted messages, and he's trying to decrypt it. Maybe a kind of brute force attack or whatever. Yeah, in that case, he could actually see what I was sending. But there is also traffic analysis. Doesn't reveal the content of the message, but it could reveal interesting information. If two people are communicating regularly on a normal basis, sending an email once every day, once every week, whatever, and all of a sudden you see many email messages between those persons, you know that there is something going on there. Something special is happening. Yeah, so that's traffic analysis. Yeah. It could be, but you have to do two things. You're collecting the data. What are you doing with the data? That's the difference here. Yeah, if you're collecting the data to try and get the content from it, that's then the first. But generally, big data will be related to traffic analysis. But big data could also be if I'm trying to look for spam messages. Yeah, then I'm more concerned with the content of a message instead of the traffic analysis. Traffic analysis really means I have a network and where are the flows of information going. Huh? And then, okay, so that's passive, just listening in, just seeing what's happening. And then active obviously means actively interfering with the communication, with the system. So we can alter system resources, affect their operation, anything. We can modify a stream of information. We can delete a stream of information. We can insert a stream of information. And that stream of information could have been a valid stream of information if I just recorded at some point in time and I transmit it later on again. Yeah, at that new point in time, it might not be a valid message, but certainly might have been at some point in time. Yes?
I've heard about sniffing. Is it active or passive?
Sniffing, I would say, is passive. Sniffing just means you're just taking a copy of everything that you see. Yeah, if you and I are communicating, yeah, then somebody might, along that communication path, sniff all that information. And so if he starts looking at that information and then also inserting his own packets, then he's going over to active. Yeah, but sniffing by itself is a passive activity. Active could also, for example, be denial of service. Yeah, I'm inserting a lot of nonsense packets such that a server will be overloaded by trying to handle all these packets. And if I do that in large quantities, yeah, then the server is only handling all these false packets instead of doing its regular job. But that's an activity that an attacker has to perform. Yeah. So here are some security requirements. Long list. Just copy and paste from my from the book into the slides. If we look at security, we have a lot of aspects there. For example, access control. Just taking the top one. Access control means that this computer, this is my computer. There is access control on it, making sure that only those people who need to have access to it get access. Another one, risk assessment. Yeah, if I have a system, I have to see what kind of threats are there against my system. What is the possibility that such a threat will be executed? What are the consequences of that? Yeah, if it is a risk that you will, which has a low possibility of occurrence, and if it occurs, then yeah, I'll lose some money or whatever. I'll lose some customers maybe. If I have a huge customer base, I don't mind one or two customers. Yeah. Then that risk is small. But if we have something that is likely to occur, and the impact is huge, is high, a high impact of the attack. Yeah, then that is from the risk analysis that shows that this is something that we have to address first. I used bold and italic here. Italic implies that these are, let's say, more management-like activities. Bold means that it is more technologically challenging. Incident response, there are management solutions for that, but also technical solutions for that. And so in this class, we'll focus mostly on the black ones, the bold ones, not the italic ones. There it is. Yeah. When we're designing a system, there's a lot of things that we have to keep in mind. For example, I'll not go over the full list, of course, and the next slide is also a continuation. Economy of the mechanism, as simple and as small as possible. If I make a security mechanism that is huge and complicated, and has the same number of lines as Windows operating system, nobody can check that. Nobody knows if that is secure. Yeah? If I make small modules that I can handle easily, and are not too complex, then I can also check and see if they are secure. Open design. Avoid security through obscurity. GSM started with a number of algorithms, and one of the algorithms was A51, which they kept secret. So the group that designed the algorithm for the mobile phones, they did not publish the A51 algorithm. People reverse engineered the hardware and came up with the algorithm anyway. Or at least they say we should call it the alleged A51 algorithm, because nobody actually confirmed that it was that algorithm. Yeah, so trying to secure the system but not telling you how things are done doesn't really help you. People will find that information anyway, and the security of a system should, in this case a crypto system, should not be in the algorithm, it should be in the key. More about that, of course, next week. What more? Let's see here. Layering. Use multiple overlapping protection approaches. Yeah, so it's like an onion. You have to peel down the onion, a lot of mechanisms behind each other before you really get access to the asset. Yeah, in terms of a computer again, if somebody wants to get access to my net bank online, well, first they have to get into the computer, so there is a password, and then they have to get access to my bank account, so they need this token for that, and there are a lot of security layers before somebody gets access to that, and then there is encryption if you talk about files and everything. Least astonishment. Program should respond in a way to least astonish the user. I guess that's more than logical. If you want security, and every time that you secure something and you have a user say, they should be able to understand what is going on. It should be not a surprise when security is used. Attack surfaces and attack trees, also very interesting. Attack surface, what is an attack surface? It's a reachable and exploitable vulnerability in a system. There are two things that are needed there. It's reachable and it is exploitable. Think about a house. Think about this room. And we have a concrete wall. I can reach that concrete wall, but I can't use it to get access to the next door room. But there is a door. Okay, I can reach that door, and I can exploit it. If I have a key or something or a hammer to smash that door, I can get to the next room. So that door would be an attack surface. I wouldn't attack this wall because there's no exploits there, but I would attack the door because I can reach it and it is exploitable. So same on systems. So for example, a service available on the inside of a firewall. Sure, I have to give people, if I want to give people access to this service, I have to allow them in my firewall. Inside my firewall in the system. So once they are there, that means that that service is available or reachable, I should say. If there is a weakness in that particular server, yeah, then it's also exploitable, and then I have an attack surface. An employee with access to classified data who is vulnerable to social engineering or blackmail. Yeah, he is reachable. This guy or this girl will go home in the evening, and I can reach him physically. I can go, or maybe I can send him email if you don't want to be visible. Yeah, and exploitable is because he has some kind of dark secrets. I can get to him to give me the access to the classified data. I can categorize attack surfaces in three categories: network, software, and human attack surface. Yeah, closely related to what we have up there. Attack surface analysis. So we have to analyze the attack surfaces. We do that to determine scale and severity of the threat to a system. How easy is it to reach such an exploitable vulnerability? How easy is it to exploit that particular vulnerability? Yeah, we have to do analysis on that to be able to see the threat to the system. Developers may find ways to make the attack surface smaller. Obviously, if I make that service that was reachable, was available inside the firewall, if I put that outside the firewall, yeah, then the attack surface is smaller because, yeah, maybe that service is, yeah, it's still available, obviously, it's still reachable and still has that vulnerability, but the fact that you're outside the firewall and can't get inside the firewall makes the attack surface smaller, makes the system more secure. The other concept is attack tree. Here we have an example of an attack tree. Yeah, for example, if I want to compromise a bank account, then this is more or less a recipe of possible ways to do that. So here we see the goal, the attacker's objective, bank account compromise. Then it's difficult to see here, the green leaves, those represent specific attacks, and then the white ones are categories which consist one or more attacks. So those are still branches. Yeah. So the green leaves, those are the attacks, and then you have to be creative in writing this down. So how would I attack a bank account? Okay, I could what does it say? User credential compromise. I needed user credentials. I could compromise in some way a system, for example, by installing malicious software, and there are different forms of that, and these are then the specific attacks that I can launch. Or I can use a credential guessing. I can brute force user credentials. So in what ways could I get access to the bank account, and what would be needed? That's displayed in this attack tree. And then the last part, last two slides. If we look at the overall security strategy, we have to think about three aspects. What, how, and okay. So what is the policy that is in place? How is it implemented? And then the last one, is it implemented in the correct manner? Yeah, because if you implement your security measures in the wrong way, then it doesn't really help. So security policy, you have to consider a number of factors. The value, what is the value of my assets? Very important, I mentioned that in the beginning already. If I have an asset and I don't value that very well, very much, I don't need a lot of protection. But if I have something of high value to me, then I need a good protection. How vulnerable is the system? And what are the potential threats? All of these things come together, of course. And then there is a trade-off between ease of use versus security. As I said, I can take my computer and I can pour concrete over it, and you can't get access to it. But the problem is I can't get access, so ease of use would then be very low. Cost of security versus cost of recovery. I can spend a lot of money improving security. I can have a room full of people monitoring everything that is happening on the network and looking for suspicious packets. That will cost me a lot of money. So maybe I should not invest money in that. Maybe I should allow that a breach will happen once in a while. That will cost me too, but maybe that's less costly than the cost of the security. So you have to see what is best for your organization. Depends on what you're depends on what you're protecting. If you have something of very high value, yeah, then maybe cost of recovery could be very high, and then I have to invest more in the security. You have to look at the full cycle of what's going on. First of all, I have my assets that I want to protect. So I want to prevent that an attack will occur. But we can't protect against everything. So at some point, an attack might actually be happening. An attack might be successful there also. Many attacks will happen, but they are unsuccessful. But at some point, there is a successful attack. And I want to know that there is a successful attack. I want to detect that. And then once I detect that, oh, now shit is happening, then I have to respond. Okay, I see that somebody is from the over the network, is inside my computer. How do I react to that? I could just close all the doors, kick him out, unplug everything. That's one response. Might not always be the best way to respond to that. It could very well be that I see that this attacker is roaming around in part of my system. But there's not so much interesting information, not so much, so many assets with a high value. There is, at that point in time, it might even be better, instead of kicking him out, to just leave him roaming around for a bit. Maybe I can divert him to a part of the system where less important information is, or even nonsense information if you talk about honeypots. Why would I do that? Exactly. So, more or less, I'm learning about him. I'm learning. Could be learning where he comes from. So I could call the police and say, "Hey, this guy is two seats down. Is in my system, right?" Or I could learn what his capabilities are. That's also a form of learning, right? Yeah. So, yeah, and I could learn how he attacks, not only what his capabilities are, but how he attacks. And the more I learn how he attacks my system, the better I can protect it afterwards. Remember that on one of the slides I said the designer of a system should know all the weaknesses. Well, in this case, the attacker would be learning me what kind of weaknesses he has found. So I can protect against that. But anyway, at the end, I do need to recover. Apparently there are some vulnerabilities that I need to patch. So recovery is then the last step. And then wait for what's happening after that again. And then the last part is assurance and evaluation. Obviously, I have a policy in place, and I have implemented that policy with a number of security mechanisms. I have to make sure that those mechanisms work as they should work. So I have to be assurance is the degree of confidence one has in the security measures. How certain am I that these security measures that I have in place are doing what they are supposed to do, are protecting me against the threats that I have foreseen in the risk analysis? And I can do a formal evaluation of that process also. That was, in fact, the last slide with information. Any questions on this? Was happy to see questions along the way. That's great. Coffee. This was, in my opinion, there might be information security management students sitting here. In my opinion, this was a bit dry. Next week it will be much more interesting, much more technical. I had a question. Was there a question? Okay. Yeah, that's good. Should be interesting anyway. I have a question about you. I talked about the tracks, and I forgot to ask it in the first lecture. I talked about the three tracks. who has already an idea of, I'm going into this track. Some clear ideas. Of those who is interested in the technology track. Some names, okay. So the other ones I had to convince to go into that track. Okay, that's good. Okay, then I know that. Okay, it's 12 now, I believe. Yeah. Let's have a real break then. I hope to see all of you back in room E211, I think, in the afternoon. Let's start there at 1:15 as is normally planned. Yeah?